Hello there. You're listening to episode 143 of Expat Property Story, which is the 13th episode in our diary-style mini-season of podcasts chronicling my UK property tour. And on yesterday's show, I left you on tenterhooks as I decided to sleep on whether to accept a deal I've been offered. This would be the 13th addition to our portfolio, and 13 has always been a lucky number for us, as my wife's birthday falls on the 13th, and on a visit to Macau 13 years ago, well, around 13 years ago, at our one and only visit to a casino, we won two consecutive games of roulette, picking, you guessed it, the number 13. So will this deal that we've been offered in Derby be our lucky 13th addition to our portfolio on this, the 13th consecutive daily episode in season 4 of the podcast? Stay tuned to find out. You're listening to Expat Property Story, a podcast in which I share my story to smooth the way for you to have your own. Expat Property Story. Day 12. It's Wednesday. I was offered the deal over the weekend. It's a three-bed terrace in Derby in an area of high demand, according to the HMO managing agent we've chosen to work with. But as I said previously, I wasn't wildly enthusiastic about it, mainly due to what I felt was a very high sourcing stroke project management fee of £30,000. Yesterday, here in Derby, I met this sourcer, who I'm calling Sourcer Number One, and we set up a Zoom call with their co-sourcer on this deal, who would be the one project managing not just the build, but the deal as a whole. So they would be coordinating the architect, my mortgage broker, my solicitor, the build team, and the selling agent, which, although it comes at a cost, frees me up to do more deals. I've played with the swing numbers to see if the deal would work by changing some of the parameters, such as predicting that interest rates may come down by 0.25% by the time of refinance, or that the project could be completed 7 months after completion rather than 8 or 10, or that the rents we achieve could be higher than the conservative estimate on the deal pack. But while it's always tempting to look at deals through rose-tinted spectacles, it's important to look at the worst-case scenario too. And if you can live with that, then it's perhaps a risk worth taking if the upside is attractive enough. And on risk, it becomes obvious to me that the biggest risk for us at this point is that I don't know the co-sourcer. So, as soon as yesterday's meeting finished, I started my research. I'd asked him for a testimonial of someone he'd done a project for in the past, and he gave me the number of a previous client. So, I WhatsApped the number and asked if I could have a chat. He came back and said yes. For an extra level of security, I decided to use video rather than just audio so that I could see who I was talking to. I asked the previous client how the project had gone, and he said he'd had no complaints at all and that, in fact, he was quite impressed. As luck would have it, the man was actually a very experienced builder himself, but was so busy on his own projects for other clients that he didn't have the time to carry out the scheme himself. He said that when he looked at the build cost numbers, he was initially sceptical, but he decided he would keep an eye on the project and be ready to step in if necessary with his own team. But the project came in on time, slightly under budget, and to a high standard, so he'd have no hesitation in recommending him. This was a better testimonial than I could have hoped for, as it came from a builder who is probably a better judge of a project than most, since it's his area of expertise. So next I went to Company's House and checked out both the co-sourcer and the builder offering the testimonial. Now, while the testimonial for the co-sourcer was a plus, his company's house record was inconclusive, because the company was relatively new, so there wasn't much to investigate. This can be a red flag, but you need more than one red flag to abandon the ship if everything else seems above board. If, for example, he'd had a string of dissolved companies as well as the relatively new one, then alarm bells would start ringing. So I checked him out on Endol, which is a resource I've come across but not really explored. What it's useful for is seeing all the companies that a director is involved in, because on Endol, it's presented as a list, so it's easier to get a fuller picture. Whereas with Companies House, if the director has some companies using, say, a middle name, and some without, then it's not as easy to see everything they're involved in. So anyway, I check out both the co-sourcer and the client recommending him on both Companies House and on Endol, and there are no further red flags. Next, I find the co-sourcer's website and see some testimonials there. One of them is from someone in my network, an ex-guest in fact, and someone I've had a fair few conversations with and have got to know fairly well. So I WhatsApp him and he says he can testify to his trustworthiness, although he hasn't actually worked with him. But the combination of the client vouching for his work and my contact vouching for his character was a good start.
It's now Wednesday evening and I have two things left to do. The first is to check on the likely rents achievable. My sourcing friends have told me that they've been conservative with the figures and that we could probably get an extra £25 per room, which would turn it from a very average deal into a good enough deal. I can't get through to the lettings agent, so I leave a message and wait for them to call me back. The second thing to do is to run it all past my mortgage broker. I get through to my broker, who confirms that everything is okay. However, my own research has revealed that there is a restrictive covenant on the property, and my broker advises that I download the title document from the land registry and forward it to my solicitor to check. There's something about easements in there, which I don't really understand. Many terraced houses in Derby have a kind of arched alleyway that runs between the houses, and I think it's all to do with right of access for emergencies. So I forward it all to my solicitor to check. One way around restrictive covenants is to take out indemnity insurance. And while talking about this with my mortgage broker, he tells me something which I didn't know. You mustn't tell the lender in advance about an issue for which you might want to take out indemnity insurance. For some reason, it must be something that the lender flags up first and then suggests to you to take out the insurance. If you flag up the issue, the lender will not allow you to take out the insurance and you will not get lending. I guess it's a bit like having a pre-existing condition that you know about when taking out health insurance. I've made good progress and my gut instinct is telling me to buy the house. Get moving. Start this next phase of our expat property story. Sourcer 1 and their co-sourcer are pushing me for an answer. My gut says yes, but my head says to wait. Wait not just for confirmation from my solicitor that the restrictive covenant on the title won't prevent us from securing term finance, i.e. a mortgage, once this 3-bed house has been developed into a 6-bed all-en-suite HMO, and for confirmation from my preferred managing agent that young professionals will be likely to pay an extra £25 per room that will turn this project into, if not a good deal, then a good enough one. So while 13 wasn't lucky this time round, it wasn't unlucky either. We're still in the game. While there have been plenty of trials and tribulations during my first ever UK property tour, it would be nice if it ultimately ended in triumph. But we'll have to wait until tomorrow's episode, number 144, which is the 14th consecutive daily podcast in this mini-season, to find out. You've been listening to
Expat Property Stories.